Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to another fun-filled episode of Black Opinions Matter, motherfucker. My name is Amino Hassan. I'm coming to you live from Miami, Florida, and it's cold as fucking windy out here, and I am pissed the fuck off because Phoenix is 81 degrees right now, and I'm here freezing my ass off in Miami. Thanks a lot, South Florida. Joined, as always, by Black Trey, Big Jerv, Rob Lopez on production, and special guest, you might know her from Wednesday Service on Wednesdays, Naima Cochran, who is, of course, music industry vet. She's worked at Bad Boys. She's worked all over the industry. She knows all the big players, major players. She always makes us smarter when she's here. And today was a great day to have Naima on, because not only are we going to talk about Coming to America, spoiler alert, I fucking hated it, but also we review on today, March 9th, the anniversary of Biggie's death, the Netflix documentary, Biggie, I Got a Story to Tell. And obviously, Naima, having worked for Bad Boy, she's got insights. She's going to give us things that we wouldn't get anywhere else, and definitely not from the documentary. We're going to learn what we learned from the documentary. Also, fear not, we're going to talk about the Snowfall episode 3. We're going to recap it. We're also going to talk about New Jack City, 30th year anniversary, and other great Black movies in history. But that's going to be on the overflow. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you're in great luck. You're going to get all of that great content. And trust me, Trey does a bit about how he protects kids that would have been bullied on in school, and we fucking lost it. But if you're not a Patreon, shame on you. You can fix that right now. Patreon.com/countthedings. Trust me, you want to be there. You want to be able to listen to all this exclusive content, whether it's bomb overflows like the one we're going to have after this episode, whether it's all the Cinephobe special edition episodes we have, like Valentine's Day, like Christmas Day, like the Cinefeud, which is the latest one that we dropped over there. There's just a ton of great content on the overflow. So definitely sign up, patreon.com/countedthings, become a Patreon, get some of this hot steaming, but that makes it sound like it's shit. It's actually great. So not that. Also, if you are not on Stereo, get on Stereo, download the Stereo app, stereo.com, or from the App Store, or stereo.com/Darth Amin. Follow me, follow everybody, because we have live shows every week. We do Bomb, we do Cinephobe, we do Mailbag, everything. You want to be there. There's a lot of fun. You get to be interactive with us over there. So those are your two missions. Patreon.com/CaptainDings, Stereo, download the app, follow me, Darth Amin, follow everybody else. But without further ado, let's get started with this show. Trey.
Yo, what's up, Amin?
What are you doing Tuesday night, bro?
I'm watching Solo Nation. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's right, man. It comes out Tuesday night. What's that, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ABC?
10 p.m. for me.
Now, you're the one that actually put me onto this. This is a show about Black people, by Black people, for all people, about the Black experience in America. This thing is fearless. It's truthful. It's funny. It's unapologetic. It's uplifting. And there will be the most incredible music involved. And big stars. Trey, how many episodes of Soul of the Nation do you think they're going to be? One, maybe? One and a half?
Nah, it's going to be six. We're going to stretch this thing out. You're going to stretch it out. Six. I mean, we have Black History Month. This is going to stretch all the way into April. This is great.
It's powerful. It's just impossible to turn away from once you start watching. And it's coming to ABC Tuesday night. Soul of a Nation. It's taking viewers inside the lived experience of Black America. Be there as history is made. Tuesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ABC, or check your local listings. Soul of a Nation on ABC America. Get ready for this.
During lockout, and the first time, I'm 25 at this time, and you know, I'm at Magic City, and I was on my strip club tour, just making my rounds because I had never been in Atlanta before. So we there, and I look, but the Kush is the cologne. So I'm like, oh, like, yo, he really be. And it just changed my whole perspective, because I just was like, it's no way these niggas do it. You know what I'm saying? It just really didn't sit in my mind that guys were just getting after it like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had peeped other people, you know what I mean? Like, obviously Stack came out later on down the line and said that he was, you know, but I'm just saying they didn't do it in front of us because it was a trust factor type thing. You know what I mean? But when I seen it, I was like, oh, I could do it. Cause it, you know what I mean? I always looked at weed as a stronger drug than what it was. You feel me?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's the gateway drug, bro. You're gonna lead to crack and cocaine.
I went to high school with kids that would like rather smoke than eat. I went to school with kids that just didn't want to go to class at 9 a.m. and smoke. And I'm just like, bro, that's crackhead shit. I would say that. Like, yo,
that's real.
Like that ain't what we. That ain't
in college, I knew people like that too. That just like smoking was. It was entirely too much of a priority.
But in retrospect, those people weren't going to go to class anyway.
Anyway, they would have done something else. You're right. They would have done something else.
I mean, how I was looking at it, these are cats that I went to school with fourth grade with. So it was kind of like dirty to me, because like Compton ain't big. So you're going to go to school with somebody, uncle, auntie, you're going to see somebody. And I just looked at it like, damn, his lips black as shit. Damn. You know what I mean? Like he smelled like weed, bro. Get away from me, bro. Like, you know what I mean? And it wasn't like he was better than somebody, but it was like, I know what the consequences of it. If I get caught, like I'm already taking a chance walking through all these hoods trying to go to school.
Yeah.
Now I got to deal with the crooked cops.
Yeah.
And if I smell like weed, they not going to believe a story to say, oh, I was just chilling in the car with somebody. Right. It's like, yo, you got a pound in your backpack. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, yo, I'm a straight A student. I hoop. You know what I'm saying? I only got two classes my senior year. So I'm getting out of school at 10 a.m., bro. Like, I ain't got nothing else to do. I'm hanging out at the school. Just chilling.
How does that happen? Like, legally, you ain't got to be there till a certain time. Like,
I had the same thing senior year. It wasn't my whole year. It was like my last semester.
So I had English and government. And
I was only supposed to have English. And one of the best pieces of advice my mom gave me was still take a full course load so that you don't go into shock when you get to college and you're taking all the classes. Again.
I signed up.
Yo, y'all was some smart asses. Y'all was some smart asses.
I had PE like three times a week, three times a day. Like, I was just, PE again.
So my grandma was a. I think I told her she was Aaron Spelling's housekeeper.
Oh, wow.
So
90210?
So they would give me Christmas gifts every year.
That was like a mansion, like a real mansion.
Yeah. So I was a latchkey kid. Shout out to latchkey kids. I had been walking home since like I was six.
Yep.
You feel me? Like
back then. I ain't had a babysitter since.
And my grandma would be like, lock the door. Nobody can come. I'll be home at 5. That was it. So I've been having that schedule all my life.
Right.
Now, I could probably pull a chick back to the crib if I was on that, but like, I'd be so bored because everybody had class. So Compton High, you know, I mean, my best friend at night school, I'm chilling. I'd join certain sports just to stay at school.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I remember playing bar football. Bar football ended. I joined a basketball team. Basketball team ended. Track or baseball. My two years. So my senior year, I had office too, because they did the block scheduling. So I had like, I would go to the office, run errands, like make copies for the counselors or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Ask them if they want McDonald's or something. I come back. You know what I mean? And then I have English AP and I have government. And then my homies who weren't as bright or didn't care, I would give them the answers to the tests later on in like period 7. Cause I'm like, yo, I want you to be eligible. You know, you always got that one nigga that's like, yo, he nice, but he ain't never got no grades. I was a nigga that helped.
Is that the kid on Power? What's
probably Tariq? Yeah, not Tariq.
fucking roommate.
Zeke, the dumbest motherfucker ever.
I helped.
They said that nigga dumb for real in real life.
I literally helped 12 people graduate.
Wow.
We were
MVP, bro. Real talk.
No, I mean all the time. No, listen.
And I know, like, I'm being dead serious, bro, because I'm one of them individuals. I had a 2-desk radius. I could see 2 front, 2 to the side, 2 behind.
Well, I mean, you just got to look at it. If y'all were my friends, I just feel bad. I know how the shit that they was doing at school and how bad it was, how important it was to their parents for them to graduate. Mm-hmm. And we had a government teacher. This nigga he was so happy to tell niggas they had to graduate in summer. You got summer school. Like, he loved that shit. Like,
that's awful.
Yeah. So me, I'm like, bro, I know I'm about
to
breeze through
this class. Going to work?
I don't know.
Why does that nigga want to work in this?
Like, I have no idea. And it was Compton. Like, I know, like, either you don't graduate or you're going to die.
Right.
I had lost so many people from going to that school. In the 2 years that I went there, kids was getting killed left and right. And it sucked. So during that time, my grandma was just like, fuck it. Y'all can come over. And I would have study sessions. She would cook dinner, make pork chops, fucking box mac, and cabbage. And we all there, and I'm like, look, this was on this test. This was on here. This was on here. This was on there. This. And we all passed.
That is dope, Trey.
I mean, you know, but I knew niggas didn't want to go to college either. At least I was going to give them that, because I was out of there as soon as I graduated. Like, it was like, all right, yo, because I ain't going to make it if I stay.
Right.
And I went to Texas Southern. So I went to Houston.
Can I ask you a... Oh, so you just gave answers on the test? Like, y'all, did you have any methods?
No, I had sheets and stuff, but I was teaching them the real habits, because my twin uncles, y'all met Ron at the live show. Ron, one of my uncles, was in the NASA program in high school. So he was like my blueprint to, like, yo, go to college, get good grades. You know what I mean? He the one who didn't make it look corny, because he taught me everything I know. So, like, I just followed that path. Like, I got to go to college because Ron make this shit look cool. He got a nice girlfriend. He coming back with shit, like clothes and shit. And I'm thinking, like, and you know, the movies in the 90s kind of portrayed that life of, like, is this what college going to be like?
Right.
I don't want to get shot watching Higher Learning, but right, I don't also right. want to look, I don't want to look at, I remember Don't Be the Menace came out, right? I was like, okay, this is funny, right? But, like, it was really people not making it coming back home from school. So, mm-hmm. I would just stay at school. I would never come home. So I'm in Houston, like, in the summer, burning the fuck up, homesick, no car, can't drink because I'm too young. Niggas country as hell, trying to tell me that California ain't shit and we soft. I'm fighting every day. Like, it just was bad. Like, you know what I mean? So I transferred the next year. Like, I was out of there. I couldn't do it. But I was glad I got the HBC. Jerry, before you even say anything, I got the Black college experience. I'm not going to go HBCU because I know Prairie.
It's not historical?
Because they know, you know, this is the thing. And that's the thing I don't like about the whole HBCU push sometimes. It's because it's elitism sometimes. It's like, I went here instead of saying.
Hey, it's not just elitism.
It's pride.
It's school pride,
paid,
but it's but
they paid it, premium to
we are the
schools are expensive as shit.
And I understand because I originally was gonna go to Wiley and play ball.
Share textbooks and, like,
yo, bro, we not doing this today, brother. We not doing this today. That's just not happening, bro. That's not happening.
I hope that all star money goes to a good place and not to, like,
oh wow.
I'm not gonna
because I went to the University of South Carolina, which is a big ass school, but I'm a product of an entire HBCU family. My boyfriend is the only reason my ass didn't go to Spelman or Howard. I regret that shit every day, but whatever.
Don't regret not going to Howard. It's cool. You'd have been
I don't,
cool
my, but my whole, only because my mom, my dad, my stepdad, my little sister, and my mom's current beau all went to Howard. So I broke, like, the family.
Wow, that's
I
a
broke
lot
the
of
the family legacy.
Oh yeah, it was all you.
Shout out to you.
It was all her. Like, what are you doing?
No, well, my mom didn't care. My father really wanted me to go. My stepfather didn't because black college operations be janky sometimes, Bursaw's office and stuff. And they lost my paperwork. And he was like, see?
No. Where's that $4 million going, Jerv? That's all.
I mean, listen, where's you might have to wait in a long line for your refund check. You know what I'm saying? Or you might have to wait in a long line because you forgot to register on time. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool.
So Naima, that was kind of like me not becoming a Kappa. They was just so disgusted in me, the men in the family. They was just like, you're groomed to be a noob. But in the South,
that's how I feel about my mom not being a double.
But in the South, it was so different. The way they rushed.
Yeah, pledging is very different in the South.
It was way different than what I've seen.
And I'm actually surprised, you being from out West, that you actually had Greeks pushing your family. Like,
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Like,
no, nah, they Sands. My cousins and uncles is Sands out in Fresno State. So
I'm surprised.
I was around that. They made me know the January 5th, 1911. Hey, and, you know,
Trey, That must be from the light-skinned side of the family.
One is Jerv's complexion and one is dark skin.
That's what I'm saying. A dark skin noob, I don't think I've ever seen one of them, man.
Wow, really?
I don't, I'm just being honest.
Yeah, you're a racist. And this is the point right here where everyone texts me and be like, yo, bro, yo, you just be letting me say all types of wild shit. And I'm like, yo, what you want me to do, dog? Like,
hey, man.
He's in a whole nother part of the country.
You led me. It's crazy.
Hey, maybe y'all just need to re-examine your hiring practice.
Okay.
Yeah, this guy.
You don't go out from the HBCU slander to the Greeks, to the BGLO slander?
No. We don't have enough time because we got to talk about...
Okay.
Today, the day that people are going to be listening to this podcast is March 9th. That's the anniversary of Biggie
being
murdered. Yeah.
First of all, before we even start, happy birthday, Kev.
Kev the barber.
Remember, he always rants about some girl saying, oh my God, Biggie died. And he's like, oh, girl, shit, it's my birthday instead. Shout out to Kev, man.
Yo.
Shout out to Kev. That is kind of
funny. I forgot about that.
Remember, he was hot.
He
was so mad.
My oldest birthday is September 12th. And all we're doing is praying, like, oh, please don't come. Because it happened in the middle of the night. Like, oh, please just make it to 12:01.
Wow. Just get to September 12th.
Because a September 11th birthday, like, come on, man.
Yeah.
It's your boon for life, you know?
Wait, you have a 20-year-old? I'm sorry. No. September 11th in general. Never mind. Like, what?
Yeah. No.
Okay. Never mind.
That would have been terrifying, by the way. Yeah. There's a 20-year-old of me somewhere.
I was bugging. Man. But then I was like, oh, you mean September 11th in general?
Could you imagine? Imagine your kids showing up just like, hi, Dad.
He's like, nah, I'm not trying to imagine that shit.
What's up, my nigga? And you trying to rekindle right now at this age?
Oh, my
Watch
God.
Out. I'm cool.
In Atlanta. It would have been in Atlanta, too.
Little nigga, you pay taxes now. You better weekend. Get on my face.
He's all country. He's got like a draw. Like, fuck this shit, shawty. Oh, like, oh my God, man.
Oh my God.
I can't.
He athletic. He telling you ain't shit in interviews. Yeah, whoever my punk ass sperm donor is, he ain't shit.
I don't fuck with that nigga no more, man.
Oh, puss asshole.
Ooh, y'all about to have so many contingencies of mad people texting y'all.
Hey, man.
Y'all, I'm just here to visit. I ain't got nothing to do with
this shit. My imaginary child. Grew up going to Greenbrier Mall in Atlanta.
You're sick of man. Shouts to the A, man. Shouts to the A, though, man.
Yo, I really need
U-Haul parties.
I really need a Lysol plane to just fly over Atlanta right now. Like, I just, I need prayer. I need oil. I need all, like, what are y'all going through in Atlanta?
Now
like, Atlanta decided to take on the burden of every other city that shut down and just be like, we're going to do all of it right the fuck now.
Here's the worst part. My homeboy told me this. My homeboy Marv said, you know for a fact someone this weekend caught corona and got pregnant at the same time.
Stop it.
All right, man.
Just because y'all brought up Atlanta, can we just shout Bobby Shmurda out real fast? Yo, he's literally the only one that I saw with a mask on.
Nigga got out of prison.
Jail teaches discipline, nigga.
Hey, shout him out following the rules, bro. Everybody else is just living.
I know.
Like, shout out to him. He be drinking water when they be offering him drinks. He ain't violating no pro.
That nigga was like, y'all ain't gonna get me on that.
You ain't gonna get me on none of that. Bobby, so shouts to him.
Do good. Rowdy, you too. I had a whole conversation with Rowdy literally the day they got popped about keeping that shit off social media. Y'all stay up.
Yes, please. I had a dream that Bobby Shmurda came out with new music.
It's coming.
It's out and it was fire. It was fire. I was like, oh, this nigga been writing the whole time.
I mean, either you're gonna catch a brick or jail made him a doper rapper. We'll see. I like the one skit that they did where they said when he came out and he said, "All right, I'm about to make some music," and it sounded like 2014. And he was like, "Yeah, man. Hey, you know what? All right, if you don't like this, let's get Fetty Wap on this." And they're like, "Yo, it's 2021."
Oh, poor Fetty, man. Like,
no, Fetty's dope though. Shouts to Fetty, man, because my man Ye Ali helped pin up some new stuff for him. So
it sounded pretty good. Where is Fetty? I haven't thought about Fetty Wap.
He just dropped the album not too long ago, like 3 weeks ago.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ain't nothing harder than talking about erectile dysfunction. I'm telling you. Isn't it ironic that the word hard describes the conversation about not being able to get hard? Usually we brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, "I lost me mojo." Or we avoid it altogether, excuses like, "I had a long day at work," or, "Sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it." But when I was a kid in the movies, it would say, "I have a headache." That was how they say they couldn't or did not want to have sexual relations that night, but saying they had a headache. You don't need to do that. And listen to me, you do not need to do that, because with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. Check it out. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward. It's simple. It's discreet. You don't have to worry about going to some weird office and seeing all the other people there who are waiting for God knows what. You could do it all from your home. It's real simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/BOM. GetRoman.com/BOM.
That was March 9th, the anniversary of Biggie Smalls passing away, getting murdered in L.A. And so we decided we were going to watch the documentary that just came out on Netflix last week, Biggie Smalls, I Got a Story to Tell. And it was, man, Jerv, you weren't lying. Jerv was the one that was really pushing it. I was blown away because, again, what were we talking about the other day where it was like, how did they have all this footage?
D-Rock was literally just carrying a camera around.
So we were talking about Hip Hop Uncovered in general.
Hip Hop Uncovered, yeah. When we're watching Hip Hop Uncovered, Naima, we were just staggered by how much of this stuff was on tape or had photos and stuff. And these people kept this stuff through the years. And so we watched this and it's basically the same thing. D-Rock was walking around with a camcorder the whole time.
So what y'all should know, sorry to interrupt you, but what you should know is like that in that as soon as camcorders were small enough to carry around, like Freaknik, beach weekends, party weekends, there was always like that dudes used to walk down the street. I remember the last Essence before Katrina, I literally saw like some guys walking down the street with camcorders. And I was like, oh God, Essence is about to go the way of Freaknik. And then Katrina happened. So not, but that was the thing. So there was always somebody in the crew with a camera. That's
Teddy Riley. All I want to do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. Mm-hmm, like that's the camcorder being more portable, accessible, et cetera. I remember, by the way, going to Freaknik, wanting to rent a camcorder because we couldn't afford one. And the only camcorder we could afford was the big joint that had like a
that looked like you were shooting the news.
So we walked, we went and we got a microphone and pretended like we were, the shit wasn't even connected. It was just like, oh yeah, we're here in the streets and Freaknik and we'll see if you go drop it low for us. Like this shit was so dumb. But again, the level of just and it's not just that. Like obviously they had a very rich catalog there, but Biggie at 13. Like his voice ain't even broke from puberty. And the photographs. And then also, I won't lie, like names that you've heard throughout the years, like, oh, that's C Gutter. Mm-hmm. Like these names that we'd heard, but I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know who any of these people were. So those are the two things. Also, one last huge observation for me was I had no idea Little C's was that short.
Oh, I knew that from the that's why they casted him so fucking little in the movie.
But in the movie, I thought it was just the most disrespectful thing ever.
Oh, no.
They got a child to play Little C's. Like,
no, he's literally like maybe like 5'3", I think, something like that.
I mean, yeah. I was terrified by how short he was.
Oh, that's Jesus him. Christ. Oh,
God. He's little.
Hey, shout out to short people, bro. I was kind of blown away about seeing, I remember being 11 and hearing, man, my man, you know, when we gonna get on, my man, and you know, he just got moked out. Like, I used to repeat that skit before the interlude, before the song started, right? I think it was Missing You, right?
Missing You.
That shit bang, too, by the way. But just to hear, like, how, you know, pretty much how O was in the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was the one that really believed in Big. His family was really in there. You know what I'm saying? And obviously a tragedy night with his uncle and, you know, in the store and shit. But like, it was crazy to like hear these names that we've kind of heard in the past 20 years. And now his face is just like, okay, that's that person.
And by the way, names that we hadn't heard. I didn't know about Uncle Dave back in Jamaica.
Shout out to Uncle Dave, bruh.
Uncle Dave with his bright yellow shirt and the bright
Dave
yellow
Wallace.
Shoes.
My son Dave. My son Dave Wallace had the wildest Jamaican fit ever. Like, it was.
Oh, yeah. He shot us.
You know what I'm saying? Tell me I'm Jamaican without saying I'm Jamaican. That's who Uncle Dave was, bruh. Like, for real.
I was skeptical just about the existence of this, right? Because I was like, what about Big story don't we know, or at least about his career story? Because Big, his career was, considering the outsized impact that it's had, his career was really short. 2 studio albums, and he wasn't like Pac where he banked a bunch of stuff, which is why we didn't have like a whole bunch of posthumous releases. We've heard everything there is. Yeah, we've heard every
45.
Yeah, well, true. But thanks to Mr. C, we've heard everything. We've heard every lyric, we've heard every bar, we've heard every whatever. So I wasn't sure what else there was to say, but this is perfect because I feel like what isn't talked about big enough is Christopher Wallace, Big the person.
Yeah.
And people who knew him would tell you, like, he was incredibly charismatic. He was funny. He was witty, really intelligent, which you can tell just from his rhymes. But people would always talk about like the kind of personality he had, right? And now you finally know more about that. And also about how long he worked at this craft. Like, now we got rappers who be like, nah, I don't even really rap for real. I just did this. Like, they didn't have a rhyme book. Like, they didn't have, you know, like, they weren't practicing. They just do it. No bars, just vibes type shit.
The fact that this nigga could have been a jazz musician, bro.
Right.
What?
His rhyme patterns were based off of the shit this jazz musician on his block was showing him.
Which is crazy.
That's nuts.
And which is skill, like crazy skill. So I appreciate that this was actually a new look at Big, because I feel like there are some artists that we just beat their stories to death.
But Naima, you being an insider, you're intimately familiar with this industry and specifically.
And I'm Bad Boy alum.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Did you know this stuff?
Not all of it, no. Not the kid. I definitely didn't know. I didn't know about the jazz artists. I know D-Rock. I had never seen Cigar in my life. I didn't know a lot about family back in Jamaica. Most of what I knew about Big started from when Big got in the game. I didn't know a whole lot about. I knew Big's block. I knew his neighborhood. I knew people over there. I knew that stuff. But I didn't really know Big's story before getting signed. I didn't know that, like that.
It's funny to me because we've had so many kind of docuseries that have come out over the years. We are. This he had the biopic Notorious that came out. And you're right, Naima. Every time something like that would come out, it's like, yeah, I kind of knew all this already.
Yeah.
You're just doing the same. It's like when they did Spider-Man movies and it was the same goddamn Spider-Man movie. He gets bit by a spider. He wrestles. His Uncle Ben dies.
Right.
He decides, great power, great responsibility. I'm like, give me the other shit, right?
And right.
And so watching it from the very beginning, you know, like, this is something that we haven't seen. And right. even little things like just seeing them in their natural element, right?
Yes.
When D-Rock comes in and Big's talking about, man, we just smoked the biggest blunt ever. I mean, it's so down to earth of, yeah. of an interaction.
Yeah, it was genuine and also him being in the moment of like not being too cool for shit. It was like, you know, because everybody has a persona to pursue and the stuff that mostly people try to carry. We got the most innocent raw footage. And I think if he would have been on this earth, he probably wouldn't have been what people have tried to make him out to be.
I don't even think Big would have kept rapping much longer. I think Big was transitioning in his mind. And I think, and I've heard from people who were close to him, that Big was transitioning to the business model, right? Like he was looking at his exit from Bad Boy. He was looking at Caesar's debut. Which really was an L, like losing Big. We lost Caesar's whole career on the low because they were working on his album and he was supposed to be up next.
And the fact that he was the pen to write all them niggas' rhymes and get them paid.
Yeah.
Seriously. All the nasty shit that Lil' Kim used to say this nigga wrote.
Right. I mean, well, the first album, and then she started.
And then she got better. Yeah.
But like, he was looking more at like what he was going to do with Adidas and clothing line, Brooklyn, like all that stuff was in the planning already, right? So I really don't even think that, or maybe he would have retired like Jay and come back. But like, I get really upset when people talk about like, Jay is only as big as he is because Big's not here. I mean, granted, Big left a space for Brooklyn, for somebody to put Brooklyn on their back like that. But I still think that Big would have had his own path. And I don't think it would have been like to continue the way we think. I think Big would have been a label head. I think Big would, you know what I mean? Like, I think Big would have been the businessman.
Naima, how surprised were you that we didn't hear from Hov, which I guess isn't that surprising, but we didn't hear from Busta either or Kim? Not from their professional experiences together, right. But given that these were characters from this time period. And we saw Kim,
right?
But we didn't really hear from her at all. And then we didn't even see the mother two.
Not very. I felt like this was really supposed to be more about like, not just the people who knew Big, but the people who like were damn near family for Big, right? This was not supposed to be the Big the rapper story. And I think that's what's important. Like, it was about Big the person.
Yeah, it was the origins of Big.
Yeah, it's an origin story.
But those cats were there. That's what I'm saying. Like, Busta was...
Yeah, but I'm... when you look at the, like, street life, you look at the person who funded, who like...
Like, Busta was at his high school, but they weren't, like, boys. You know what I'm saying? Like, him and Jay, it wasn't... They were there-ish. They were there, meaning they were all in similar spaces at the same time, but they weren't integral to the story.
That's like if Hov came out and was like, oh, that's my best friend. You know what I mean? And was going hard and was like overtelling stories, like, oh, you know what I mean? It would be a little different.
But Jay and Big didn't even really, the first time Jay and Big were even met each other were when they did Brooklyn's Finest. Yeah. They had never even met each other before then. So that's what I'm saying. They were around, but they weren't. Like,
they weren't tight like that. Yeah, it's like us being in the same space with another podcast, and they're like, "Oh, don't y'all know them? Y'all supposed to know them."
Be like, "No."
You know what I'm saying?
Like, Clark told this amazing story on Jay's birthday on Clubhouse about how he had to finagle that studio session because both of them wanted the because he made the track for Jay. Big heard it. Big wanted the track. Dame and Jay were like, "Why should we put him on our shit?" Big was like, "Why should I be on their shit?" Because he was one who was like, "Y'all do it together," and Big came in the studio and saw, and Jay just like went in, laid his bars down, left space for Big, but like didn't write nothing, didn't do nothing. And Big was like, what the fuck just happened? And Clark said that was the day Big stopped writing that day. Like, because he saw
Jay do it.
Yeah, because he seen somebody want to.
And he said, Clark said, I've been telling him forever, but you have to see this dude and you have to see him in action. And Big was like, did he just lay his joints down? Like, what was that? And he said it actually took Big a minute to get back to him with his bars because he left the session and was like, I'm a one take hove.
That's crazy.
hey. But Big had the better verses on that track, though. That's a nice parlor trick, sir.
Hey, but take your time and go ahead and get smoked. Yeah. All right. But look, here's one thing that I just discovered today. I guess the day before he died, March 8th, he went to go see Donnie Brasco. Mm. He recorded Victory, All About the Benjamins.
Oh, man.
And the next day he dies.
Damn.
Wow.
And also, he went to a tattoo parlor on Sunset with Lil C's, and he saw Shaq there, and Shaq and Uncle Jerome, and Shaq said, hey, man, what's going on? Not much. What's going on with you? What y'all getting into tonight? We going to that vibe party. And Shaq said, don't do that. And according to Shaq, the rest is history.
Imagine being warned not to go to a vibe party. Like, that sounds so crazy in 2021. Like, the vibe party might be the shit to get you set up. But it's a different era.
I mean, that's the same as the Source and all that shit, though. Like,
but Vibe was supposed to be the sexy shit. The Source
Vibe
was like,
Vibe's yeah. a grown up. Vibe was like grown up.
Vibe was a Vibe was night.
If you're 25 and older, put your hands up.
Yeah.
If you're wearing some slacks, put your hands up.
I mean, I'm just saying in that particular area, though, like, ain't nobody safe in that shit, bro. Because that shit is still right there.
Yo, when y'all, I know we all know how old he was when he died and whatever, right? But
it feels different now.
Yeah, like when you hear it every single time, no matter when it happens, like it's always just like, damn, he was super duper young. Yeah,
bro.
Baby.
I'm going to tell you what really tripped me out when I sat back and I did the math and realized that I'm almost exactly his mom's age
when he died.
They got shot.
Wow.
Like, forget about what I accomplished at his age.
Yeah.
At her age, I'm like, oh, shit. Like. So it's staggering. Him and Pac, man, like
yeah.
he died so young, but because they I can't even say what I'm about to say. I can't, because Pac was prolific, big. Naima just said it. His career really was like 3-4 years.
Yeah. And I would even argue Big's impact is stronger than Pac's. Like, I'm not going to say Pac didn't have influence, but Big's rhyme style, because Pac didn't have a signature style. Like, I mean, he did, but he didn't. Big,
and you see what my enemies?
You could dissect. Big was like a master class in wordplay,
yes.
in flow,
yes.
in like,
yes.
in storytelling. Like, there's so much there. Tell and them. Then, even with that, when
sermons
you think
on Mondays now or Tuesdays now.
But even with that, when you think of how young he is, right? But this level, I can. Still listen to Big shit and hear something I didn't hear before.
I'm gonna say my nigga Pac was like on some get rich quick shit.
No, Pac, man, I think that Pac was just getting increasingly angrier or more disconnected over the course of his career. Like, you can hear it in his album. Well,
that,
but
and then he, because he had that fear, that mortality,
yeah,
the shortness of mortality,
Pac he was courting
way death. More driven to make more.
Yeah,
because he knew I ain't gonna be around to make this, and volume does not always equal quality, and so that's why.
Well, also I think Suge Knight locked him in a studio and was like, "Nigga, keep recording." I think there was also that. I think that was also a factor. I'm just saying, like, you got out of jail and went to the studio.
But Naima, the only thing I'll push back on you is that in those first 5 to 7 years after Pac died, the number of copycat from Image,
fucking Ja Rule,
how your rhyme style, you're like, it was so many. It was Ja Rule, 50 yeah. took some of that.
Lil Wayne,
remember Lil Zane?
Yeah,
Calling
Me was hard, bro.
But did they really? But I mean, the reason I say it with Big is because did it really transform?
I mean, Big guy
permanently.
Big guy, Gorilla like, Black.
Well, that's just a guy that sounds.
Yeah, yeah, just right? sound like.
But
yeah,
like,
yeah.
but like for Big, I would say, well, first of all, I keep saying this. Listen to Jay-Z pre Volume One.
You mean when he was rapping like Foo Snickens?
Not that far back. You don't have to go that far back, but you could listen to
like Hawaiian Sophie.
No, we're not going that far back, though. We just stay reasonable doubt volume one.
That was a nasty hove. I only like my hove with a durag.
Difference between reasonable doubt and volume one. You think he got slicker between reasonable doubt and volume one?
I think the influence of Biggie definitely bled in the same way that Biggie, by the way,
but Nick was already out when Jay dropped Reasonable Doubt.
No,
Hoes Flow is definitely a slightly different in on Volume One. It definitely he slows it down a little bit more than he did for Reasonable Doubt.
Slows it down,
right?
And it's a lot more
because the reason was out. And by the way, go ahead.
And I was gonna say, Reasonable Doubt is rather drug luxurious, right? Big, I could be wrong, but I feel like Big made that transition on Life After Death where it became less drug glorious and it was more just this luxury life.
Well, that wasn't just now. Big. We went from the mafioso era to the bling era.
Hove after that on Volume One was the same way to me as well.
I wasn't talking about content. I was talking about more like the flow. And Big did it too, because if you listen to, there are tracks on Ready to Die. Well, Big's voice is mad high pitched.
Big got heavier.
That's real.
He gained weight.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace.
Yeah. He gained weight.
But Hove did the same thing.
Right.
That's what I'm telling you. If you listen to like 22 Twos, if you listen to almost every track on that first album, I love them, but there's definitely a difference in that. And then You Belong to the Sea, the way he gained weight is a great way to put it, Naima. Yeah. It's slower, it's heavier.
Well, I meant Big literally gained weight, but yeah. because you can tell his breathing is different in the flow of everything. But no, I agree with that. They slowed down. You could say it could be a few different things. I think it's hard to really point to direct influence when that was actually an arc that the whole game was taking. You know what I mean? In terms of like that change. And I will say that Reasonable Doubt was more conversational, but I also feel like you said, like Big's flow on Ready to Die versus Life After Death is different. He's coming from a different place. I feel like the difference with both of those is like on Ready to Die, Big's hungry, and on Life After Death, he made it, right? Like you're on different sides of the game a little bit.
Let me ask you guys this question, because I always wonder this, if this is just me being old or if I'm truly hearing something that's there. I always felt like there are a bunch of Biggie songs that if they came out today, have you guys ever seen the movie Yesterday? No. It's a movie.
Oh, where the Beatles don't exist?
Yeah, where the Beatles don't exist, except this one dude is like, what do you mean you don't know where the Beatles are? And so he's like a failed singer. So then he starts singing Beatles songs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what's my man? The not Sam Smith, the other British singer. You guys know what I'm talking about. I'm in love with the shape of you.
Ed Sheeran.
So he's touring with Ed Sheeran. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, hey, let me try this new song. And he'll drop a Beatles song. And Ed Sheeran is like, that's the greatest songwriter of all time, right? Like, so even on a contemporary style, people are all recognizing the genius of the music. If that happened, a hip hop version of that, and people had never heard of Biggie, and then someone just dropped this guy's music, would we sound here as like, this sounds so dated from the 90s?
No.
Or do you think people would legit like, oh shit?
No,
I don't think so.
Because Niggas Bleed is crazy right now. If I heard a Niggas Bleed in 2021, I'm throwing my fucking hat like Bobby Smurda in the air, nigga. That shit crazy, nigga. I can't fuck with Ready to Die. I think it's raw. I think it's raw, but it's painting a picture. Like he said, when he first seen what Dre and Snoop and them was doing in the West and then got Boys in the Hood and Men's Society to paint that, he went and wanted to show what the block was like over here in Bed-Stuy and Bushwick and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So overall, trying to hear that now, since we already see it.
I think you also had to separate like the production and the lyrics. So like if somebody took Big's lyrics.
There you go.
And his flow, I think absolutely it was still right. Because it was still cut through everything right now.
So I think about Victory. Like that's a track you said he recorded the day before he died or whatever. If Victory came out now, in the commission, you asked for permission to hit him.
Hard. He would get love.
Like me hitting while wifey.
He would get love.
Or what's the one with the got lawyers watching lawyers, so I won't go broke.
I think that like
Notorious.
I think that kicking the door. We never referenced that Notorious because that's the remix. We're not talking about that.
Oh, okay.
But I think like I think the lyrics from Kicking the Door could still go. I think Who Shot You could still go.
Yeah.
I think Who Shot You is one of the grimiest, most epic. Fucking, oh my God. Like, it's just, Nasheem, I love you for that. But it's like, I think some of Big's like really raw shit could still go. The Up Tempos might be in question. Yeah. The Party Joints, I think I Got a Story to Tell could still rock though, because it's genius.
You don't think more money, more problems with
I still don't forgive that. I still don't forgive that nigga Big for saying the Knicks game was rained out though.
but that's him being funny though.
Right.
I guess.
He had to make it work.
That's him being funny. I don't know. I guess that shit was rained out or something.
You know, bro, yeah, that ain't nothing but just...
That's niggas talking shit.
That's shit talking.
It is like, shit talking. Man. It was over some shit like, I don't even watch sports, my nigga. I'll just rob niggas.
The other
I watch sports, happened, my nigga. I just rob niggas. And this nigga 6'5", something.
They figured out it was Anthony Mason, RIP to Anthony Mason.
But apparently... It was supposed to be Anthony Mason, but it wasn't a real whatever. But
it wasn't a real.
I used to think it was Allen Houston, but
everyone thought it was Allen Houston. Everyone thought it was Allen Houston.
But can you imagine that? Like, if you're Allen Houston, you hearing everyone have this rumor about you, you got to be like, damn, am I that? Like, what's wrong
with that?
But Jerb, the other thing also is that this dude is like the most religious guy in the world. Like, this is.
Oh, word.
So it's just like, it's just a situation. I can't imagine Allen Houston being in that situation.
Yeah.
So, but anyways.
I don't even want to see Allen Houston get robbed.
Shout out to Allen Houston. The other big thing that we watched this week was something that social media had me believing. Oh, this is great. They're all back together. And then I watched it and I said, God damn you influencers. In 2021, mental health is finally a thing. So many people are struggling right now and aren't feeling like their normal selves. Look, therapy helps. And it doesn't have to be sitting around just talking about your feelings. So what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. You can privately talk to someone if you feel like you're not dealing well with stress or you're having relationship issues. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. See if it's for you, because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Black Opinions Matter listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/BOM. That's BetterHelp.com/BOM. It was, of course, Coming to America on Amazon Prime. I'm going to tell y'all right now, man. The first red flag for me, the absolute first red flag was when I hit play and it said PG-13.
Yep.
Dead giveaway.
Yep.
Dead giveaway.
Yep.
You are not.
That hurt my heart when I saw that.
Hey, before the movie even started, I saw PG-13, and
so I'm gonna get into all that. I'm gonna explain why.
Are you allowed to? I don't want to get you.
I'm gonna just say this for PG-13. The reason why PG-13 was a thing was because they wanted to bridge the gap.
The generation gap.
The generation
and gap. Also, I could see that in the movie.
It was supposed to be a theater release. That's the other thing.
Yes.
PG-13 for the theater releases is how they make the money. PG-13 movies gross higher than
regular. I'm not taking my family. I wouldn't have taken my family.
I mean, your daughter's not old enough anyway, though. But I'm just saying,
I'm talking about Eddie's daughter.
But I'm just saying, like, if Jerb was taking like his 13-year-old daughter and he says, okay, I seen this 30 years ago and I want to, you know, pretty much, because it's 32 years old.
I could see that. And I could see that. I almost could tell too much that part of the goal of the movie was to kind of make it a newer. It's almost like they want to make a new version of Coming to America, right? Instead of a sequel.
No, they didn't.
No, but hear me out. I mean, hear me out why I say that. It was a sequel, but it was a sequel that it mirrored the exact same plot of the first one, just in reverse, right? And it also tried to hit, it didn't just recall the great moments of the first one, it tried to recreate all the great moments of the first one. And that actually was what strained it, was that it didn't feel like it was enough to just flashback to recall, mention. But when you try to actually recreate the, like, if you're a comedian, you can't recreate the bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, the joke is the joke. Right. So, but, like, when you're trying to recreate it, update it, do whatever, and put it on Fleek and shit, even if you make it an inside joke in the movie, it still is like, you end up with a product where it's like, it's not quite hip enough for a younger generation of viewer, but it's also doing too much for, like, the original viewer. So that was what was kind of challenging about it.
So to me, if they had tried to remake it, I would have, they did try to remake it, first of all. You're right. But if they had tried to remake it with the same spirit, meaning the first one was irreverent and push boundaries, and we're going to do it all over again, I would be fine. The problem is they try to make the Disneyland version. And correct. The Disneyland version means A, everything is, I said, like, in the first 10 minutes of the original Coming to America, he gets called a dumb fuck by a cab driver. And then 3 minutes later, he turns to Sammy and says, what is a dumb fuck? And in this one, not only do they not have an F-bomb in the entire movie, even though PG-13 allows you one F-bomb, there's one that happens in the gag reel that happens after the movie because someone messed up a line and said, ah. And they bleeped it out. I'm like, you couldn't even give us that one?
And it was Morgan Freeman of all.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh. So here's the thing. Right. Here are the major problems, right? You can recreate, you could try to recreate bits, but make the joke. It felt like they had a bunch of things in their head, like, wouldn't it be cool if we tried this? And that's what the movie was. And that's why you get, watch this. So that's why you get things like, there's a musical number every 5 fucking minutes. I don't remember there being a million musical numbers in the original Coming to America. I remember when
there were musical references, but there were not musical numbers per se. So, time, like, you had the Soul Glow theme, you had the To Be Love theme.
But, like, Soul Glow. The other thing is, think about, okay, who would be the villain in the original Coming to America?
I mean, it's Daryl, but not really. There's not a real villain per se. That was the other thing about this that made it, like, high drama as a villain.
But if you make Daryl the villain because he's an asshole throughout the entire movie, right? He's never redeemed. He's an asshole. But Daryl, everyone that they encountered in that movie, other than the Zamundans, was a normal person, right? Like,
right.
Cleo McDowell, a little, like, quirky, but he's the kind of guy that you would actually meet. And the guys in the barbershop is a very accurate barbershop kind of depiction. And the guys at the you know, Randy Watson and the preacher are reminiscent. In fact, the preacher is based on an actual preacher that Arsenio.
But they are a little bit. They're a little bit. Parodies is the wrong word. They're a little bit like sketch comedy versions of these people, right?
Sure.
Because that's one thing somebody said, like, well, these characters are so over the top. And I know they were.
Everybody was over the top.
I know they were more over the top than the original, but the original really was, it was caricatures of, like, these characters that we all know, right?
But
there was, I think one of the things was now it, because there's been so much time for Coming to America to age. And I argue that Coming to America, The Color Purple, and, like, Friday are three of the most quoted Black movies that we have. Like, there's so much from all three of those movies just in our lexicon. Like, what is that? Yes. Velvet or Aha or Sexual Chocolate or That Boy Good or Sounds So Beautiful, Don't You Agree? Like, there's so much, right?
The invention of the mic drop, by the way.
Yes, the mic drop. Randy Watson and the mic drop. Like, there's so much there that I think that the bevy of writers, because that's part of the problem, like, so many people handled the script over time and it kept getting shifted around. Wherever it landed people kept too much in mind, not just what were the main heartbeats of the movie, but what are the things people most quote or laugh at or whatever, which is two different things. So it's like, instead of focusing on the major points or heartbeats of the first movie that made it what it was, there was too much focus on what are the quotables from the first movie.
Right.
How do we redo those?
It's all a caricature. It's a caricature of that movie rather than a remaking. But my point was, Naima, is like, Wesley's character is over the top. Leslie Jones is over the top. Tracy Morgan is over the top.
Leslie was too much.
Everyone was too much. There was nobody who just kind of played their zone. Also,
there were also too many characters we had to pay attention to.
Too many characters.
We have all the characters from the first one.
Not enough of the originals.
Right. So we have all the characters from the first one, except, well, we don't have the mom. And then obviously King Joffrey dies early. But then we have, okay, so the first movie, the people we had to actually pay attention to were Sammy, Akeem, Lisa, and Daryl, and Patrice, and Mr. McDowell. Like, that was kind of it, right? Everybody else was background. Yeah. And then the king and the queen.
But those
to a lesser extent. Everybody else was background.
Right.
There were too many people here in the foreground, right? Yes. Like, we had, the story was about him and Lisa, and it's about the kids, and it's about the son. And then you got these other queen's characters. And it is too many. It just felt very crowded. But in saying all of that, I didn't go in. Anybody who came in expecting this to be like, I guess I'm kind of surprised that the criticism is fair. I'm kind of surprised at like a shocking criticism, because what do you think it was going? It's meant to be a nostalgia play.
I'm not critical because I watched it and I was disappointed. I'm critical, and maybe this is my fault. But all these people who got the advanced screeners, mm-hmm, all sucked its dick. Like, oh my God, they're back. Oh my God. And I'm whoa.
I want to know that Trey has dropped off y'all watching when he says this. No.
Yo, I'm just like,
I want to know that Trey's not here.
He definitely would have made that clear real fast.
I'm just saying, what were y'all watching? Because I didn't laugh.
I laughed.
You didn't laugh at all?
I laughed a few times. I didn't laugh as much as I will laugh even now at the original.
I laughed.
I definitely laughed a few times.
I laughed harder in the gag reel when the kid is holding the whiskers. He said,
I got some whiskers. And Eddie's like, that's my thing. Yeah.
But it's not even like Eddie. It's the weirdest thing because, like you said, this is one of the most quoted movies of all time.
Right.
And part of it, well, even though that's not part of the movie, that's from his stand-up, but part of me was, I really felt very warm and fuzzy at seeing Eddie recognize
his own
material.
Shit. Yeah.
And then the other part was the realization, did that motherfucker do it on purpose? Or has it just been to the point where Eddie's shit is just so powerful, you do it and you don't even know you're doing Eddie's shit?
Right.
And that, I won't lie, I wanted the second part to be more true. I wanted him to just be like, I got the whiskers, da da da. And like Eddie, like, wait a second.
That's my shit. I love that moment though. I wish that had, it was like, that's my thing. Yeah, like that was,
that was cool. Legitimately, I felt good watching that.
Right.
But for most of it, I'm just like, I don't know, man. It just, for instance, if we're going to do the whole, shouldn't the daughter be the queen or whatever? I'm going to be honest, we didn't really need two more daughters.
And the two other daughters, A, they didn't do shit.
Don't do that to them. They didn't come and save the day during the Rumble.
They helped, but that was their sole purpose. They didn't really talk. They didn't have a whole lot to say. Yeah. And I felt like the ages were off for how long Lisa and Akeem have been married. I was like, they've been married 31 years. Why?
These kids should be grown by now,
Why is there a 9-year-old? Like, what the fuck is that? You know?
Clearly, that was a liquored up night. And then...
Has Lisa never gone back to New York? Because I was almost like, has Lisa never gone back? Like, she never went home? But
I'm sorry, I lost y'all earlier. I'm going to chime in.
That's okay, because Amin was talking shit about
you. I know, I'm pretty sure. Here it is. I give the movie an 8 out of 10, right?
8? And
here's the thing.
I liked it, bro, but not an 8 out of 10.
Here's the thing. And listen, I'm going to give the writer, I'm going to give the team the benefit of the doubt. It's 32 years. and you're turning water into wine. People have been begging for a sequel for...
No, they haven't.
We haven't.
Nobody's been begging.
We all said it was perfect. Don't ruin it.
Right.
I mean, to an extent.
Sorry, I love you.
I mean, I was too young to watch it the first time, and I've seen it and I love the original, but I'm just saying on where they were going with it, I didn't love the overall casting, but I understood the direction that they were trying to go. Right. I didn't love the son. I thought he was corny as shit.
Yeah, I was like,
super corny. They could have somebody better than that.
But I'm not going to.
He felt like they pulled him off Comic View.
I'm not going to shit on that black man and be anti-black. I mean, respect
everybody's
his
black
career.
In this movie.
Everybody's black. We is good, bro.
No, plus
this family.
No,
we at the red table.
It was a waste
of Tracy Morgan, and it was doing too much with because Tracy can be so much funnier.
You know who I wanted to see more of? I thought we'd Arsenio. Have a bigger role. Well, no, first of all, anyone. I wanted more Arsenio. I wanted more John Amos. I wanted more of the originals to have just more of a role than just a couple. Yeah. Hey, remember this?
So here's the thing.
But I was mad
Garcelle Bouvier was still there.
Hold on. One person, one new character that I thought when I heard he was going to be in it, and when I saw him on the screen, like, oh, he's about to kill this.
Wesley Snipes.
Rotimi.
Oh, Rotimi. No.
Because, no, I'm telling
you. Nah, bro. He didn't need to be in that shit. Yeah.
No, not in that role, but in general, this is a huge waste of a dude who's talented, who's Nigerian, right? Can do the accent, can do like the kind of the quote unquote funny African thing. Michael Blackson too, but Rotimi.
I thought they would use more of Tiana too. To be honest, I was disappointed when she did the whatever you want shit.
She was fine.
I mean, here's the thing about the new act.
I like her.
Again, it fits in the same role. This is supposed to take place in 2020, right? So you're still trying to adapt with the 2020 audience. It's like when Jordans come out and you say, fuck, man, like, why did they make it that color? Right. It was good as it is.
You
right?
know that, though. But Trey, I'm going to push back on that only because. So like I took the movie. What you missed was me saying I took the movie for what it was. So I wasn't disappointed with it. I laughed a few times. It could have been stronger. I think I would have been more disappointed. Oh, look at the baby. Had I gone to see this in theaters, then I would have been like, okay, I'm annoyed. Seeing it at home was fine. But when you look at like Bad Boys for Life, I was like, we do not need another Bad Boys. We do not need the shit 17 years after the last one came out. We absolutely don't. But it was really well done. And the reason it was really well done is because they aged everybody up appropriately and they called back to what we love about the other Bad Boys while still like advancing Marcus and Mike, like their relationship and everything, the dynamic. And that's what I feel like was missing here. We didn't get enough of the characters, the essence of the characters. And there were too many people for us to follow. Like the first one was a real development of a love story between Akeem and Lisa, right? Like we yes. saw the arc. This one is like, they done had a couple of heart to hearts and this nigga like, actually, I want to marry you because you want to open a... So, like, I just didn't... And enough to like run to the States and do all this other shit. I didn't believe them. I believed Akeem and Lisa in a movie that was like a almost damn near a parody sketch. But I didn't believe them, right? And I wanted to see... And if we were going to do Akeem and Lisa, let's see more of how they developed. Like, everybody was underutilized except Eddie and the fucking... And Leslie, who was overutilized, and the kid who played the son. Everybody else was not used enough.
Hallelujah, amen.
To show up. Why is Garcelle Bouvier still a flower girl? It's been 30 years. She ain't got something else, other shit to do. Why is Vanessa Bell Calloway still barking to hopping on my foot? Why?
She was in a spell.
I know, but these are things that... They didn't have to continue this way. You could have incorporated.
I mean, like, look, I understand the disdain. I'm just trying to, you know.
Protect your check. I'm not mad.
No, because listen, the check's still cleared. So I ain't tripping. All I'm saying is look, I'm just trying to paint the picture of why. I'm not going to try to change anybody's mind about it. In the same way I tweeted about it, I said, look, this is what we did.
Right.
I don't give a fuck what y'all think about it. You can hate it or love it. I personally enjoyed it. And that's all I'm saying about it because I'm trying to explain it. And even when I would like kind of tease a little bit, I'm like, look, people was wondering what these characters are up to. The reason why it wasn't John Amos. John Amos could barely fucking walk.
Yeah, you could tell it was a struggle. Don't have this whole shit being about they have the McFlurry, we have the McFlurry. Like, that was a whole shit. Like,
John, can I bossa nova?
Yeah. Like,
can I bossa nova?
Yes. Give me a bossa nova.
Come on, McDonald's.
Rob, you got me? All right.
So the only thing that made the movie was my banner.
You know what? Not mad at it.
So the only thing that made the movie was my banner.
And when they killed that off, we were like, at least leave it in the movie.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Okay.
Then, and wear black.
Okay, I rescind my statement about
me too.
The utilization of John Amos. Based on information we were given in the Bossa Nova.
I'm glad. You should, if you're listening, you're like, oh, I want to know. Trust me. You should be glad too that they kept it in. But that doesn't explain, again, like Naima said, the underutilization of characters that we really like and the overexposure of people whose characters weren't really well fleshed out. And I think the most important part, Naima, is what you said. The love story between Lisa and Akeem is such a slow burn in the first one, where she starts with she doesn't even notice him. And then she notices him and she's just being friendly as girls do to guys because, you know, you never know. And then he proves his value and Daryl proves that he's a jerk and all the things kind of line up. And by the end of the movie, they fall in love. And in this one, like I said, she did the nigga's hair one time and he fell in love.
Yeah, it's like they had three conversations and all of a sudden he's I'm trying to marry you.
Man, he was pretty trash too, by the way. Like, he was just
sucker for love.
The nigga was 30. Listen, he was 30. He ain't really amount to nothing. He ain't know who his daddy was.
He definitely was not acting like a 30-year-old.
I think that I will say
he definitely was like 18, 19.
It was poorly cast in that situation.
Oh my God. I forgot he was supposed to be that old. Shit. Yeah,
but yeah, again, you had to look at it in the scenario of what they're I try to understand the trajectory of who's next in Hollywood, right? Because he was in Sorry to Bother You, and then he's in this, and he's going to be in something else. And I tried to, when I got a chance to look at the script, I'm like, who the fuck is this?
But Trey,
he was inconsistent.
I'm going to say this. If the writing was tighter, maybe he could have done a better job.
I agree with that because there were some moments that I really thought, oh, his timing is really good. Like, there were moments where I was like, he's good. His flow is good. His timing.
When Tiana Taylor walks in and he's just turning and looks at, like, he killed that shit, right?
There were moments where he was really good. So he had the capacity.
Also, fellow New Yorkers, how'd you feel how he portrayed as a New Yorker coming to Zamunda?
First of all, he did not feel like a New Yorker to me.
Oh, he just felt like random.
Yeah. He's basically me in New York.
The Midwest or some shit.
Even
Leslie, who is a New Yorker, almost didn't feel like, I don't know. Right. It was weird. I do think that the fish out of waterness was really extreme, right? Like, who doesn't know what caviar is? Like, you know what I mean? There was just a lot of
the black mashed potatoes.
Yeah, there was a lot of the fish out of awareness, especially in the age of the internet, in the age of, you know, Afrobeat, in the age of fucking, you know.
By the way, that's the other thing.
Everybody doing a don't touch challenge at the beginning of the damn pandemic. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a great point. I wanted more when they're in Zamunda. Why are they playing all this? It's gonna sound fucked up. American R&B. Music. Like, why? And not even like, why is Salt and Pepper here? Who the fuck asked for Salt and Pepper?
Y'all know Africans hate coming to America, right? Like, they hate it.
No. African right here, first of all.
You're an American African.
But no. I'm telling you,
Africans who just
all my family who came, they love it. They fucking love it because
maybe it's West Africans.
Maybe it is West Africans because I'm telling you, like, we fucking love that movie. I watched it in Sudan the first time. Mm. I watched it on tape in Sudan, and we're like, oh my God, this is so
Or maybe
good.
It's younger, because I've heard, so I've had to explain to people often about Coming to America that when the movie came out, we had literally, first of all, we had not seen the continent portrayed on screen often outside of the damn
Tarzan.
Sally, what's her name? The Feed the Kids. That was one funny thing from fucking Tracy, where he was like, for 5 cents, hey, I'll fucking take care of you. But when we saw those commercials all the time with like the starving kids, and your parents would be like, eat all your dinner because there's hungry kids in Africa. Like that was really like the entire 80s was that, right? And Roots. Like, so to see for the first time a movie that's centered on people from the continent, and like modern day African royalty, and not just like the old African royalty that was on like the Budweiser calendars that we got for Black History Month, or just whatever we got from, but like modern African royalty, to see the continent is like wealthy and beautiful and colorful. Like, we didn't, that was so big then, even though, and he made it theatrical on purpose, mm-hmm. right? Because he wanted it to feel ceremonial and regal and lush and all of that.
But it wasn't cartoonish though.
It wasn't cartoonish. So, and you're right, this kind of took it to a really extra, like the midnight train place. From the midnight train from Zamunda.
Silly, it's silly. It's silly. Yeah, it's it turned it silly.
Also, shouts to Rick Ross lending his house.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
No, he didn't lend his house.
The ballroom, the bedroom are Rick's.
He did not lend his house.
Yeah. They bought, they rented it.
Yeah, they rented it.
No, hold on. They rented the bedroom, it. And
decorated
that nigga's
it.
In the movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good.
I mean, your house is like, yo, y'all need my house? Go ahead.
It was a good move. It was a good move for him, though.
And have me in the movie. That's not lending my house. That's called quid pro quo.
All
that's
right, called, so quid pro quo.
What are y'all going to do for me? Am I going to be in the movie? Are y'all going to pay me for my house?
I'm not giving that.
I'm not giving that nigga credit for that shit. For him to be. But, I'm not giving that nigga credit.
Why don't I have credit? And they left the bedroom designed as it is. They left the dining room. It wasn't the ballroom. It was the hallway or the entryway.
He's
the
got bedroom, a nice house.
The dining room. Yeah.
That's all I give him. You got a nice house, bro.
Shout out to Evander Holyfield.
You have a palatial
estate. Because it was Evander's house first. Yeah, shout out to him.
They should have put Holyfield in the movie.
Rick Ross probably said no. They probably wanted to. Rick Ross was like, no.
Wow, the Rick Ross hate is.
I didn't see this coming.
No, I'm just, no, because I hear so many people like, oh my God, Rick Ross was so gracious. He's not gracious.
Speaking of old ass movies, New Jack City turned 30 today.
Okay, hold that one, because we got to wrap, and we'll do overtime. We'll talk New Jack City and we'll talk Snowfall. All right, man. I'm done giving people credit for shit that they got compensated for. This is what we're gonna do. Because Snowfall had another episode. We gotta recap that. And New Jack City turned 30. And we all obviously have to talk about that seminal thing. They both have great tie-ins. So we're gonna head to overtime. If you are a Patreon, go ahead and check it out. Patreon.com/countthedings. And listen to us talk about those two topics. If you're not, why are you wasting time? Just sign up. Get up in that. All right?
Get up in that?
Yeah, up in the Patreon. Yes. Look, I've been drinking, Naima. Stop, okay?
Crazy. I'm in Miami. I'm just saying.
I'm in Miami. I'm burping. I'm having a hard time keeping it together. But this has been Black Opinions Matter,
that
motherfucker.
That explains the Rick Ross hate. There it is. Okay.
Yo, Rob.
Yo, Amin.
What's the biggest complaint I always have whenever we record these podcasts?
Besides Jerv being too sleepy, I think it's you forget to name a couple of things. You always want to talk about some extra stuff.
Oh, man. It's the worst feeling in the world. When we get done and we say cut and I'm sending the files to Rob and I say, shit, I forgot we were going to talk about this topic or that topic. Well, guess what? We're not going to have those problems anymore if you go ahead and download the Stereo app. That's right. Go to stereo.com/DarthAmin and make sure you are linked and subscribe to us. And we're going to talk about all of the different things that I always forget about. This is a great app. Every time you guys are listening to this pod, you say, oh, I wish I could chime in. But you're listening to a pod. You can never chime in. It's pre-recorded. Guess what? With Stereo, you're able to have your voice heard. You can ask real-time questions about either the pod episode we recorded or whatever we're talking about at the time. It's great. It's a forum for you to listen to your favorite podcasters. That'll be me and yours truly, all at the Count the Things Network. And we're going to be out here. We're going to do this regularly, multiple times a week. Just hop on Stereo, download the app, subscribe, follow Darth Amin, follow Talk Hoops, follow Trayvon, follow Big Waz, all of us. You know who we are. You search for us on the Stereo app. You will find us and subscribe to us and be a part of these conversations real time. Have the ability to ask the questions that you want to ask. Stop us when we're on some bullshit, as we are frequently. And of course, catch some content that goes above and beyond what you listen to in the podcast you already love. Again, that is the Stereo app. And you can follow me, stereo.com/DarthAmin. You can look up everybody else by their handles. Their handles are all the same as what we have on social media. You can join us multiple times a week. I love Stereo. I'm on the app talking all the time. Follow me and get notified every time I go live.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.